Coming up today on Renewing Your Mind.
Do you realize that if there's one maverick molecule running loose in this cosmos, beyond the pale, beyond the scope of God's sovereign control and authority, you have no reason as a Christian to believe a single promise of the future that God has made.
Well, that statement from Dr. R.C. Sproul brings comfort to us as we face these uncertain days. God is firmly in control of His creation. There's not a single maverick molecule that is outside of His sovereign command. And that includes a virus named COVID-19. Welcome to Renewing Your Mind on this Lord's Day. We are pleased to bring you the conclusion of Dr. Sproul's message, Nothing Left to Chance.
A few years ago, I had the responsibility in the seminary to teach the theology of the Westminster Confession of Faith, that document that was produced in the 17th century in England by the Westminster Divines that is the most comprehensive expression of historic Reformed theology ever set on paper. And I had done the first chapter of the confession, and I went finished the second chapter of the confession, and I announced after that, I said, next week, we're going to take up chapter 3. Which is entitled, Of God's Eternal Decrees. Now, as soon as I announced that, there was a stir among the students. I mean, they knew what that meant. They said, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. That means he's going to get into predestination and all that juicy stuff that has to do with God's sovereignty and human freedom and the things that every theological student in seminary likes to argue into the night. So the next Monday evening, when I came to the classroom, there were 150 students there. There were like 50 guests. And I began by reading the opening words of chapter 3 of the Westminster Confession. Chapter 3 begins with these words, God, from all eternity, did by the most wise and holy counsel of His own will, freely and immutably, that is, unchangeably, ordain whatsoever comes to pass, semicolon. Let me state it again, in other words, that God, from all eternity, according to His holy counsel, doth freely and immutably ordain whatsoever comes to pass, semicolon. I read that and I stopped and I said to the class, I said, all right, how many of you believe that? How many of you believe that God foreordains every single thing that happens? Automobile accidents, train wrecks, the birth of baby, the death of your spouse. God ordains it, everything that comes to pass. How many of you believe it? 100 hands went up. These were Reformed students. These guys were fighting for the angels. This was old hat to them. They didn't have any problem. I said, okay, how many of you don't believe it? 50 hands went up. I said, fine. I said, okay, let me ask another question. How many of you would freely acknowledge that you are atheists? And nobody put their hand up. And I was flabbergasted. Let me see if I get this straight. You're telling me you don't believe that God ordains whatsoever comes to pass, but you're not an atheist. I can't put those two together. I said, don't you realize that so far, up to the semicolon of what I've read, this statement in the Westminster Confession has nothing in it that is distinctively Calvinistic or Reformed. It has nothing in it that's even uniquely Christian. Every Jew would affirm what I've just read. Every Muslim would affirm what I've just read. Any cogently thinking theist would have to affirm what I just read. We haven't even gotten to the Reformed doctrine of predestination yet. All it says is that from all eternity, God ordains whatsoever comes to pass. I said, what that statement affirms is that God is sovereign over everything that happens. But the great Augustine in the 4th century made the comment, carefully now, think carefully, that God ordains, at least in some sense, everything that comes to pass. It may be in a passive sense, what some people call God's will of permission. It's a little bit misleading, that term, as if he gives his endorsement or sanction on your sin. He permits your sin in the sense that he doesn't stop you from doing it, but he doesn't sanction it. But any time that you commit a sin, God at that moment always had the power to prevent you from doing it. He could have squashed you like a bug, taken the breath out of your lungs at that minute and stopped you from doing it. And the fact that he didn't intervene, that he didn't intrude, the fact that he decided to let you do it, not with his blessing, but to give you the ability to do it, in a certain sense, you see, he chose that it should come to pass. Because he is absolutely sovereign over everything that happens. And I said, do you realize that if there's one maverick molecule running loose in this cosmos, beyond the pale, beyond the scope of God's sovereign control and authority, you have no reason as a Christian to believe a single promise of the future that God has made. One maverick molecule could destroy all of the plans, not only of mice and men, but of Almighty God, if God does not ordain whatsoever comes to pass. Remember when you were children, you learned a little story. For one of the nail, the shoe was lost. For one of the shoe, the horse was lost. For one of the horse, the rider was lost. For one of the rider, the battle was lost. For one of the battle, the war was lost. All because one nail. When I was a boy, one of my heroes was a race driver by the name of Bill Vukovich, who was killed in the Indianapolis 500 when that super expensive piece of machinery, a prototype, costing tens of thousands of dollars to build and construct, failed in a turn because a 10-cent cotter pin broke. Grain of sand in the kidney of Oliver Cromwell changed the course of history. At the Battle of Fort Duquesne in the French and Indian War, a young lieutenant had 5 horses shot out from under him, and 1 bullet from an enemy rifle went through his shirt as it flapped in the breeze, and it went in one side of his shirt and out the other side of the shirt without even creasing the skin on his back. And he survived that battle, and George Washington became the first president of the United States. You know, 1/10 of an inch, and he wouldn't have survived that battle of Fort Duquesne. But by chance, he made it. Through the fortunes of circumstances. I don't know. One maverick molecule outside the authority of God's sovereign control could thwart his plans and prevent the return of Christ, could prevent the vindication of faith that you hold dear. Beloved, there is no such thing as chance. I was in a discussion once with a professor at Harvard University. He taught in the graduate school at Harvard in the field of the philosophy of science. And we were talking about the origin of the cosmos. And he didn't believe in God. And I said, well, where do you think the universe came from? And he said, well, the universe was created by chance. And I said, you know, the universe was created by chance. I'm not sure I understand what you mean. I said, are you telling me that the power supply for everything that is, the Big Bang of the entire universe, that was ultimately caused by chance? And he said, yes. I said, that's amazing. I said, don't you realize the chance can't do anything? He said, what do you mean? And I said, well, let me show you what I mean. And I took a coin out of my pocket and I said, and I say to you here, if I took a 50-cent piece and balanced it on my thumb, and I said to you, I'm going to flip this coin up in the air, what are the chances that it comes up head or tails? What's the chances? Go ahead.
One in two.
One in two. What's the percentage? 50-50. No. 50-50. Now, listen to what I said. I said, if I flip the coin, what are the chances that it comes up heads or tails? 100%. Unless it stands on its head somehow. You know, I fooled you, didn't I? Okay, what we mean, though, is I said, okay, if I flip that coin, what are the chances that it'll come up heads? 50-50. You have a 50% chance. Because there are only two options. There's only two sides to the coin. And so we say the odds are, the chances are, that it'll come up heads 50% of the time. Now, what I asked this gentleman from Harvard was, how much influence does chance exert on the flip of the coin? What causes that coin to come up heads? Does it have anything to do with where I start, whether it's heads up or tails up? How much pressure I exert with my thumb, the density of the atmosphere, how many revolutions it makes, whether I catch it here, here, or here, and after I catch it, whether I turn it over or don't turn it over. There are all those variables. We could add to those variables so many complexities that would drive us nuts trying to predict how it's going to turn out. But we can cut the Gordian knot. We can reduce the options to the simple options that are there mathematically. The mathematical possibilities are they can be one and two. And so I say the chances are 50-50 that it's going to come up heads. But how much power, how much force does chance exert? Absolutely none. I said to that professor, chance cannot do anything because chance isn't anything. He said, what do you mean? I said, the word chance is a word that we use, a cipher, a symbol, to describe mathematical possibilities. You're now giving to chance not just a empty word to describe possibilities, you're giving it being, power, ability to do work. I said chance can do nothing because chance is not a thing. It's not an entity. It is no thing. Let me say it again. It is no thing. Faster, it is no thing. Even faster, it is nothing. Do you see that? Chance has no being, and if it has no being, it has no power. For something to do something, it first must be. And when I said that, that good professor went like this. He says, of course, wicked people. Well, he says, I can't believe I made that mistake. Isn't it interesting that some of the most foolish mistakes are the kinds of mistakes made by the most learned and brilliant of people. Chance can't do anything. What are the chances that the universe was created by chance? Huh? Not a chance. Because to say that the universe was created by chance is to say that the universe was created by nothing. And I realize that there are intelligent people who say that. In effect, because people are saying that the universe created itself. That's madness. For something to create itself, to be self-created, would require what? For something to create itself, it would have to be when? Before it was. To create itself, it would have to be before it created itself to be what it is that's giving me a headache. It would have to be and not be at the same time in the same relationship. The most fundamental violation of reason is to say something like that. Nothing can create itself. Nothing can do nothing. And people argue about creation, and I say to them, do you believe that anything exists now? Do you exist now? Is there anything here? Even if you think it's all an illusion, do you think the illusion's here? I say, where'd it come from? Ladies and gentlemen, if anything exists now, this is elementary, then there never could have been a time when there was nothing. Because the most fundamental maxim of all reason and all science and all philosophy is the maxim ex nihilo nihil fit. Out of nothing, nothing comes. If there was ever a time when there was nothing, the only thing there could possibly be now couldn't possibly be now. Because the only thing there could be would be nothing. And nothing is not something, not even a little something, not even a microscopic something, not even a subatomic something. It is nothing. And if there was ever a time that there was nothing, there would be nothing now. So there always had to be something, something that had the very power of being within itself, or nothing could possibly be. Is there anything more elementary than that? If the equation is God or chance, the only possible solution, ladies and gentlemen, is God. Because chance can do nothing. Well, what does that mean about atheism? I said, if you believe in chance, that things happen by chance, what you're saying is God is not sovereign. I've never met a Christian yet. I've met plenty of people who weren't Christians who denied the sovereignty of God, but I've never met a Christian who said, I do not believe in the sovereignty of God. Every Christian says he believes in the sovereignty of God. But it takes about 5 minutes to probe that, to discover that not one out of 100 Christians believe in the sovereignty of God. As soon as you begin to examine it, there's precious little sovereignty left. If God is not sovereign, God is not God. It's that simple. And so I say the Philistines, with their doctrine of chance, were basically atheists. Now again, give them some credit. They were pre-scientific. They were primitive people. They didn't have the benefit of the scientific revolution, did they? But nobody in this day and age would attribute power or reality to chance. Don't I wish? The dominant view of the origin of the cosmos, the dominant view of the origin of the human race in our culture, is that both man and his world have come by, from, and through chance. Now, if you don't give ontological status to chance, they'll still say that it still came by this chance, random collision of molecules or of atoms that happened for no reason at all. Examine that carefully, and it's the same idea of something out of nothing. Well, let's see what happens with the experiment. So the men did so, and they took the two milk cows and hitched them to the cart and shut up their calves at home. And they put the ark of the Lord on the cart and the box with the golden mice and the likenesses of their hemorrhoids. And the cows took the straight way in the direction of Bethshemesh, and they went along the highway, lowing as they went, and did not turn aside to the right or to the left. And the lords of the Philistines followed them to the border of Bethshemesh. I love this story. I don't know anything about farming or about the cattle industry. I have a man here in the studio audience tonight who has his PhD in cows, and he's trying to help me struggle through this text. I always thought, you know, from singing the Christmas carols, the cattle are lowing. I thought that that meant that they were sort of like purring, like contented kittens. You know, like Elsie, the contented cow. I thought that this kind of meant that when these cows were going to their destiny and following the route that they were traveling on the road to Bethshemesh, that the fact that they were lowing meant that they were joyful in their task, and they were sort of moving along singing Onward Christian Cows. But that's... I've been corrected by that, and they say, no, what's happening here is that the Philistines, in their experiment, are trying to get the cows to act contra naturam, against nature. Then when a cow has a calf, and that cow has never been yoked, put on a cart before, that the natural impulse of that mother cow is to be with her calf. And you take that mother cow away from her calf, and put her on a cart and just let her loose, nature would say that she would make a beeline back to her calf. But instead, these cows go straight for Israel, straight for Beth-Shemesh, turning neither to the left or to the right, lowing, crying as they go. But no matter how sad and torn they are obedient to the sovereignty of God's providential rule. And they crossed the border into Israel and came to the threshing field of Joshua in Beth-Shemesh. And the scriptures tell us that these cows that hadn't moved to the left or to the right marched up carrying their cargo and stood on the stone floor of Joshua. And when the Jewish people saw it, saw them coming, the word went through the community. Everybody gathered around. They could recognize as this cargo approached that these cows were bringing back to Israel the Ark of God. The Bible doesn't say it happened, but I'm sure one of the lookouts, when he recognized what was coming back across the border of Israel, screamed at the top of his lungs, "Kavod! The glory of God has come back." And as the people celebrated the return of the throne of God, they dismantled the cart, took the treasure, carefully prepared the Ark of the Covenant, and the cow stood there on the stone. And the farmers were so happy that they wanted to offer a burnt sacrifice of thanksgiving to God. And so they took the cart and cut it up into firewood. And as the cow stood there in obedience, they put the wood underneath them and they kindled it and sacrificed the cows on that spot. Centuries later, God sent a lamb on a mission. In his providence, God ordained from the foundation of the world that this lamb should go to an altar to be slain as a sacrifice. And the record of history was that this lamb, as he was led to the slaughter, opened not his mouth, but neither did he turn to the left, nor did he turn to the right, but he went with his face set as a flint toward Jerusalem, to the place of sacrifice. Do you think that happened by chance? Do you think that the Lamb of God went forth to die perchance? Or did God, from the foundation of the world, freely and immutably, by the holy and wise counsel of his will, ordain that it should come to pass? Nothing that ever happens to you happens by chance. If God is God, then he is sovereign. And if he is sovereign, there are no maverick molecules. And no maverick molecules, no accidents. No accidents, nothing happens by chance. What are the chances that God would leave your redemption to chance? Not a chance.
That's Dr. R.C. Sproul with one of his most popular and requested messages, Nothing Left to Chance. We're pleased to share it with you today on this Lord's Day edition of Renewing Your Mind. Over the past several weeks, we have been pleased to bring you some of the messages that really defined R.C.'s ministry over the years. We've put them together in a series that we call the Classic Collection, If you're new to Ligonier Ministries or want to introduce a friend or family member to the ministry, this is a great place to start, and we will send you the 10 CD set when you contact us with your donation of any amount. You can make your request at renewingyourmind.org. A couple of the other messages that you'll hear in this series are, What is Truth? And If God is Good, Why Do I Suffer? Each message about an hour long, so you'll hear quite a bit more than we've been able to share with you here on the program. So again, request the classic collection when you go to renewingyourmind.org. And on behalf of everyone here at Ligonier Ministries, let me thank you for your generous donation of any amount. Well, next Sunday, we will bring you another message from the classic collection, and it's one that has some controversy with it. It's titled, All Christians Believe in Predestination. You'll want to join us again next week for Renewing Your Mind.